we'll just start it by you stating your name and your address and phone number, email, and then how you want your title to be.
I'm David Lee. Address is Route 1, Box 40, Hoboken, Georgia, 31542. Phone number is 912-458-2493. And there is no title. I'm just another one in a long line of a family, a community of singers.
Okay, why don't you start by just describing, if you're going to tell somebody who doesn't know what Sacred Harp or Shape Note Singing is.
Shape Note Singing, which we call Sacred Harp Singing, is Sacred Harp Singing is a more specific title than Shape Note Singing. It's a style of singing that includes as many people as are available to sing without any kind of instruments to accompany the singing, in a style that will allow for any quality of voice, everybody can participate, and make an unusually rich and strong and beautiful music together.
Now, why is it called Shape Note? What are the shapes mean?
Writing music and reading music is a language, and it's a very detailed and specific language that you have to study a long time to learn. But a couple of hundred years ago, a system was designed to allow people to read music without having to know all those things, and the way they did it was by assigning each note on the scale a particular shape. Then all you have to do is teach people that which shape gives which pitch of sound. And then all we have to do in order to read the music is just read just the shapes themselves, and then each shape will put us on the right pitch and the same pitch together so that we all are singing the same note at the same time. That's all we have to learn is just those shapes, which tells us where we're at on the scale.
Okay, I think...
Let's
try that one again, because
okay.
I think you finally got to it, what the shapes
okay.
meant at the end. So why don't you just try doing that answer again and then describe the different shapes to what
all right.
they are.
Each note on the scale is given a different shape so that we can tell the difference in them. There's 8 notes on the scale. The first one is a triangle called fa, or the keynote. And then there we also have a round note called sol, and a square note called la, and a diamond shape called mi. Each of those shapes tells us where we're at on the scale, so all we have to do is read the shape to know how to sing together.
Where do you sing like this? Where are the places where the singing occurs?
We sing anywhere that we're together, whether it be a funeral, a wedding, baptism, a group of people around a dining room table in the kitchen, beside the river, or at formal announced sings where we either meet at someone's home or we meet at a public place like the schoolhouse.
Maybe you could just address the fact if you ever sing in church or not.
We do sing in church. In fact, singing is a big part of what we do in church.
But shape note singing?
Shape note singing. We don't sing from the shape note book when we're in church, but it's the tunes we learn in the shape note book that we use when we sing in church. And the style of singing at the shape note sing, or rather the songs that we learn at the shape note sing, is what we carry over into our style of church singing, which is a little bit different.
Let's just try that last part again. Relationship between the shape note singing and church, and you might, in answering the question, mention what church you're talking about.
We sing at the Primitive Baptist Church, which our family has always been members of. We sing out of a word book only, and we sing slower and even more ornamented style in the church house than we do at the shape note sing, because we don't use those. We don't use those shapes in the church, since we're singing from a word-only book.
So what's the relationship between church and the shape note singing?
The tunes we learn at the Shape Note Sing are the ones that we employ at the church. The Shape Note Sings are a doorway to the singing at the church for us. We sing together in the Shape Note Sings. Everybody sings together at the Shape Note Sings. In the church, not everybody that goes to the sing goes to church. So the church people have their style of singing, or their group of singers that sing in a manner that you don't, that's not the same. I don't know how to say that. Let me try that. Let's see. I'm just going to have to talk now. Y'all going to have to edit this. The entire community is invited to the Shape Note Sings, or are part of the Shape Note Sings, and sing together. Out there, we have a more structured sing because we are guided by the shapes and by the time signatures. In the church, we sing more for spiritualism. We try to sing more reverential in the church, though we're using the tunes we learn at the Shape Note Sings and that we sing out of the Shape Note book. They take on a different aspect when we go to church with them, because we're singing them for a more specific reason when we go to the church. There we're singing strictly in a worship mode. At the Sacred Harp Sings, we're singing through excitement and joy, and of course spiritual reasons, but we're with different people. We're in the public eye. Everybody's in the public at the Shape Note Sings, at the scheduled and planned Shape Note Sings, but then they leave and each go to their individual churches and use the same tunes.
How old, or what parts of the United States, be careful too with your hand.
I just realized that, yeah.
In what part of the United States do they sing Sacred Harp?
They sing Sacred Harp throughout the United States, from coast to coast. But it's only recently spread beyond the southeastern corner of the United States. In maybe the last 15 years, it started to spread around. And now it's from California to Maine.
How old is Shape Note Singing, and how did it get started? What do you know about it?
The only thing I know about Shape Note Singing is that in the late 1700s, a system of naming the notes was designed. And that system was designed in the New England states by musicians up there. The shapes came down to the southeastern corner of the country, down in where we're at, in Alabama and Georgia and South Carolina, Tennessee, Mississippi, and apparently in the early 1800s. The book that we use to sing out of, our original book, was published in the 1840s, I think 1844. So we know we've been using that book for that length of time. However, the oldest church in this community is High Bluff, which was put here in 1821. And I know those people were singing in 1821. And so they were singing this music before the Sacred Harp book was published. Sacred Harp Singing in our area.
Start that again without
this.
Just say it. Just say Sacred Harp.
Sacred Harp Singing in our area. What was the question again?
Answer the question about how old Shape Note Singing is and how it got started by talking about what you know about it here and in your family and who kind of the first.
Okay. Well, that has to do. High Bluff Church was put here in 1821. We know they were singing there then because the minutes show that they were. We also know that Lazarus Dallin started singing Sacred Harp based on his, the biography that was written of him says that he was teaching and leading Sacred Harp Sings. Well, he was living in the middle 1800s. And so that's when he would have been teaching Sacred Harp Sings in our area here. In our family, the Lee family, I know that it goes back for several generations, but we don't know, we don't have any reason to know whether it did or did not go back before great-great-grandpa John. It likely would have. He had to learn it from somebody, but I don't know who he would have learned it from. was we just don't have any record of that.
Why don't you answer that question one more time by
Okay.
saying something you said to me about what generation of Sacred Harp singer you are, and that it goes back to your great-great-grandpa John Lee, who was living during such and such a period.
My children are sixth generation Sacred Harp singers. Great-great-grandpa John was singing Sacred Harp. So says Aunt Rachel, who is his baby daughter. That would have taken our family back into the middle 1800s. That somewhere in all that you can figure out how old it is.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay, that was good. What are your earliest memories of singing, Shape Not Singing?
My earliest memories go back to when I was sitting in a chair and my feet were sticking out in front of me. I wasn't big enough for my feet to touch the floor, and holding a book in my lap, singing by myself. I had to be young enough then that it was before I started to school. That's my earliest memory. But my early memories include times at people's, at granddaddy's house, or at Uncle Silas's, or at other homes in the community, of course at the churches, and of the school here in Hoboken, and other community centers in Patterson and some other places where people would gather together to sing. I remember singing on the front porch when the men were sitting around before or after supper, and the women would come out on the porch to help them. I remember singing by the water's edge at the river during baptism as a young boy. I can remember, of course, singing at funerals as a young boy and being affected by it, and then being in church and singing when we were barely old enough to, or barely tall enough to look over the back of the bench to see where the singers were, but they were all around us.
Just clarify, when you said singing at baptisms or at funerals, when you're talking about shape note singing, that's not, you might sing at, you wouldn't have shape note singing as part of a formal service within the Primitive Baptist Church, no, would you?
No.
But
shape note singing is the means to an end. The shape note book itself is a textbook, in a sense, that we can use to learn how to make music together and to sing this style of music that we sing. But the shape note book in and of itself is not an end. That's not where we're trying to go. In fact, a lot of our time spent singing is spent without a book at all, where we're singing purely from, singing from the heart, singing by heart and from the heart. The shape note book was not included in our worship practices or worship services as an object. Of course, we used it to sing from and to learn from, and we sung together out of it for the enjoyment of being together and for entertainment purposes, I guess you would call it. But the book was not our mission. The book was not an end in itself. It was only the means to an end. And as such, it was only a small part of what we call singing together. The book had very little to do with that.
Who in your family sang, and then how did the children learn it? And I think maybe in answering that, you might want to talk. I mean, the first is a huge question.
Yeah. Well, that's easy to answer, though. Everybody in our family sang. Everybody. The children learned by example, like I did, the children learned by being around the older people in the family that were singing, and we also learned at singing school, which they held usually once a year at the schoolhouse. They would have a singing school, and when the children would attend the singing school, and the sing leader would teach it and teach the notes and teach the rest and teach walking time and singing the scale.
When would you sing for your supper? You talked about singing for your supper. Tell us about that.
Now, I can't edit this down to a short answer. Okay. A cousin of mine, Clark Lee, and I were good buddies growing up. And we both joined the church at an early age. We both were 17 when we joined the church. in our way of life, after church on Sunday, we would go by somebody's house in the community. These churches were scattered over about four counties. And after church on Sunday, we'd go by somebody's house in the community to that had been at church that day, and they would prepare a big meal, and a lot of people would go by and enjoy being together. Clark and I, as young men, would be called into the kitchen where the lady of the house was preparing the meal. And since none of us had radios and none of us had televisions, I guess we were her entertainment, or the ladies that were in there cooking, we were their entertainment. And they'd ask for Clark and I to come in there and sing to them. And so, which was all we needed, was a good excuse to sing, because we love singing together anyway. And so we would go in the kitchen, and while they cooked and bustled about the kitchen, Clark and I sat there and sang from memory, or we would gather up the books we needed and sing out of the book, the hymn book, or sing out of the notebook, the shape notebook. The one thing that it guaranteed us that is that we were the favorites of the lady of the house, and so that we got the biggest and the hottest biscuit, and we got the biggest piece of cake, or the first piece of cake. We knew that we were her favorite as long as we would sing for her. And so that was just our little thing that we did as young boys, going around and singing for these ladies.
Are there many different... the question is, are there many different styles or types of shape note singing around the country? Now, you've been in different places, and are they... Do you notice differences?
There are regional differences in the singing around the country. But it's mostly driven by the people that are there, because the quality of the voices are going to be different, and by their own local likes or dislikes. The music itself, they are all using the same books, and the books are written in the same format or the same style. But the same song would sound different if you went from region to region because of local likes and dislikes.
Well, then, leading on that local likes and dislikes, let's talk about Hoboken style. And describe what you think Hoboken style, you might want to illustrate, at least in terms of the, if you can, like, just take a line of singing and do it Alabama style and Hoboken.
Hoboken style singing first.
Start it again because I might have been talking.
Okay. Hoboken style singing became what it is because we were totally isolated from all the other singers in the country. We never sang with anybody except ourselves. And because of that isolation, we developed a completely different way of singing this music. Though we sing it for the same reasons that the other people do, and we do the same things with it, we grew off at a different direction because we did not mix with those people. The other singers around the country sang together from time to time, and they visited back and to from time to time. And so they sound more similar than we did.
Why don't you answer that question again and just sort of talk? That's actually the next question, but we'll get back to it about why people developed a different style of singing here. When you talk about the isolation, in your answer, explain why you were isolated. You might want to tie it into the church and the beliefs of the church.
Hoboken was isolated from the other singers first by geography, because the closest group of singers we know are a couple of hundred miles away. We had no reason to travel over there, and we were perfectly content with what we had at home, because the entire community was involved in our singing, and a majority of the community was involved in, or at least rooted in, our religion. We didn't go outside of our religion, and we didn't go outside of our people or our way. That's why we were isolated from the others. We sang because we were isolated from the others then, our singing grew off in a different direction than they did everywhere else, and it was not tempered by visiting back into. I'm forgetting exactly where we were going with this, because this is a little bit structured to be able to just free flow like I normally like to do, but that's okay. We'll work through
Talk
it.
about Hoboken style then. What's distinctive about Hoboken style?
Hoboken is sung slower. It's sung lower. We never had alto. And we didn't talk about the four parts of this music. But our treble and tenor are the lead part. And the bass was the only three parts that we used in our music. And then because we sang slower, we sang at a more deliberate pace. And it allowed for time to do more things with your voice between the notes. All those reasons go into making us sound different than the other people do. They sing a lot faster and a lot more accurately than we do, or a lot more precisely than we do. And so they have a totally different sound, or what I call a different sound, though they're singing the same songs. I know when I'm hearing our people sing and when I'm hearing anybody else sing. Though we've been visiting together for a few years now, and we're starting to sound more like, we're having some things that we sound more like the others, we still have that Hoboken style or that Hoboken sound for the most part.
Would you be able to take a short, pick something, anything out of the notebook, and if you could sing the treble line or even the bass line, something you know, a favorite, and sing it the way you do now and the way you used to do to illustrate Hoboken sound, just with the ornamentation? Like we did when we did Canaan Land or whatever that night.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you could just illustrate the difference.
The way they do everywhere else.
The difference in pitch, the difference in speed, the difference in ornamentation.
Well, the way they, let me think. A good example would be the difference in us and the others you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. By singing.
Let me think a second. Okay, here's a good example. I used this one in Chicago, and it really, they saw what I was saying because, and I think I did this for you in that other interview, Show Pity Lord. Okay, that's a good example. And if you sing this song precisely and the way that other groups sing it, they sing it, what? You gonna turn the tape over? Oh, they sing it according to the book. And the way they sing that song is, sure.
That second sentence again.
What did I say? Oh, okay. The way other groups sing that song is, show pity, Lord, oh Lord, forgive, and so forth. The way we sing that song is, show pity, Lord, oh Lord, forgive, and so forth. That's the best example of the two differences. Not of the two differences. That's the best example of the differences in the two groups of people.
The one thing you didn't talk about with Hoboken style is walking time. You might see if you could describe that to people.
In Hoboken, when we sing together at a formal, organized group, we sit in four sections facing... All four sections are facing in a square, in a hollow, what we call a hollow square. And all four sections are facing in. In the middle then, in a square that's about 10 by 10 or 12 by 12, is where the leader stands. The leader in our group walks time, meaning that he steps to a particular pace that fits the time signature of that song and goes around and around the square. As he walks time. By doing that, he establishes the rhythm of the song and the beat of the song so that we all can stay together. And it's just a little practice that we have down here that we don't know of anybody else that does it. We don't know where we started it or don't know why we started it. It certainly is not called, it's not, some people think we're dancing, but the leader is dancing, but it's not dancing. We are Primitive Baptists, and we don't dance. So, but it's a way of establishing the beat of the song so that everybody can follow the leader. I think that it probably had its roots in singing school. And in singing school, everybody's taught the walk time. Boys and girls alike are all put on the floor together, and we're all taught the steps, and we all learn to walk time. Then at a sing, all the boys and girls are called on the floor for two or three songs to walk time together, and so that we can get the feel for walking time when a sing's going on. And then we sit back down, and the leader stays up there and continues to walk time to every song that's sung. That's the way we did it.
Why don't you answer that question one more time, and maybe you could talk about the ways people mark time and how, talk about marking time with the hands, but then add in the unique thing about Hoboken that time is also marked with the feet.
In keeping time to the three modes of time, how do I answer this?
We just talk about keeping time, but there's two ways.
Okay, then there's three modes of time, and there's three beats, three different styles of beats. In order to do that, you have to mark time to four beats to the measure, which means you move your hand in an L-shaped pattern, or six beats to the measure, or three beats to the measure. And those three different modes of time would require that you'd move your hand in a particular pattern to establish that those beats. I'm on track so far? Okay. In Hoboken, we also add one more thing where the leader actually walks time while he's beating time with his hand. And he walks in a particular pace that fits the rhythm of that song. Each mode of time has a different step to it. He goes around and around the circle of this hollow square and beats time and steps to that particular rhythm to maintain the beat of the song. We didn't have any other kind of music. I was raised in a home without radios and without televisions.
Say that again, 'cause I might have been talking.
We didn't have any other kind of music. I was raised in a home without radios and without televisions. Our family was raised in homes like that. Because we were primitive Baptists, we did not partake in instruments of any kind. Though there were some around, and we knew of some people that were in the community that would be a fiddler or a banjo player, we didn't participate in it because it was not in keeping with our religion and our belief. The only style of music that we had anything to do with was our singing, our style of sacred harp or shape note singing. And I never participated in or never learned anything about or never had anything to do with any other style of music other than that.
When did you first listen to the radio or watch TV?
There were radios among our circle of friends. And I guess I must have heard a radio playing at some point in time when we were growing up. It was not anything that we listened to for a very long period of time. It would only be while we were visiting somebody that had one. Same thing for television. I can remember seeing a few little programs on television when I was growing up, when we would go visit somewhere that had one, but it wasn't anything that we spent any time watching because we didn't have it at home, so therefore we didn't learn anything about. I don't know how young I would have been the first TV I saw or the first radio I heard, but we certainly heard them and knew they were there. We just didn't have them in our home, and we didn't have anything to do with them.
What you might add here is I think when you and I first met, which was February of 97, I think you told me you had just bought your own TV for this house for the first time because you wanted to play videos of Sacred Harp.
Yeah.
Just mentioned that.
Okay. I have a TV in my home now that I bought about 3 years ago, I think. And I got it so I could watch videos of these Sacred Harp sings that people were taking. That's why I wanted it. Of course, it has other programs on it, and we watch them now some. but it still is not a major part of the circle of our family, and I don't imagine it ever will be. As far as listening to the radio, I'll add this. I think that was part of what was on there. I don't know, but I don't care anything about listening to it. It just, the other kinds of music, when we were talking about that a few minutes ago, the other kind of music don't really appeal to me. I can listen to it for a little while, and I even go over here to Whitmer Cruz's, to his bluegrass park. I like to go over there about once a year, and I can sit there and listen to him for 3 or 4 hours, and then that's enough to last me. It don't particularly appeal to me. It's nice to hear, and I'm glad for people to do it, but it just don't appeal to me very much. I could go to a sing most every day, I guess, or listen to some singing a little bit, but I don't care anything about the rest of it.
The next question, maybe we've talked about it, but let's do it again. Do you listen to any other recorded music? Like, do you have CDs or cassettes? And if not, why not?
I
Why
don't
not?
listen to any other kind of music on any CDs or tapes or radio or what have you, except maybe a few minutes at the time if I'm around it. But it just does not appeal to me. And I get tired of it pretty quick. And it's not anything. I can appreciate good music, and I like, and I know there are other styles of music that are good music, and but it just doesn't appeal to me.
Why do you, can you put your finger, is it the church? Why is it that it doesn't appeal to you?
I think because I have no connections to it or through it. All my connections are through our style of music. And I don't have any early memories of a particular country music singer or a rock and roll band, or I don't have any events that I attended with friends that would make me want enjoy it or have any connection to it. It's totally disassociated. It's like listening to a foreign language. I enjoy listening to people talk in a foreign language for a few minutes just for the novelty of listening to somebody say something that I can't understand, but I have absolutely no connections through it.
Could you paint a picture for somebody who was blind or had never seen it about what Shake Not singers look like when they sing, how they stand, how they move? How would you, if someone was blind or something, how would you describe it to them?
No, I don't think I could.
No.
Well, it would depend on where we were singing. I could describe this way. When we're singing together, we are either standing around the dining room table facing each other, or we are sitting in a circle in a family room facing each other. Or we are standing in a semicircle at the river's edge during a baptism, facing each other and the person in the water. Or at a formal sing, we're sitting in a square facing each other. I think the common theme is that we're facing each other while we're singing. We're always singing to each other and for each other. And that requires that we would be facing each other.
Talk a little bit about that formation and how that helps to sort of, you know, be across and get that wall of sound or connect with a certain singer.
Whenever we set up a sing, be it around a dining room table or if it's at the schoolhouse or wherever, we try to make sure that we keep the individual parts in groups so that the tenor would stand, typically the tenor would stand at the head of the dining room table and at the foot of the dining room table. And then we would put the bass on one side of the table and the treble on the other so that they're across from each other, so that you get a better blend, a better mix of the music that way. You can hear the treble section when you want to hear it, and you can hear the bass section when you want to hear it. And I think if we scattered the different parts, just scattered them all random among all the people, you wouldn't get the same effect. The same thing at the same when we go out to Hoboken is we set the tenor or the lead part in one section, and we set the treble in another section, and we set the bass in another section. and usually would put the tenor in two places out there because we've got that four-sided hollow square. So the tenor would be across from each other, and then the bass and treble would be across from each other.
Let's do this now because I'm not sure. I can't remember if we did it before, but just go through briefly the parts. If you want to add the alto now, you can, and just talk about the role of each part, the high harmony, the foundation, the tenor
Okay.
being the lead.
The tenor is the melody of the song or the lead part of the song, and it's sung by men and women and children, of course. That's the tune of the song. That's the part that you would remember if you heard a song. The treble sets to their immediate right, and the treble is sung by men and women. That's the high harmony part. The bass sits to the immediate left of the tenors, and that is men only, and that's the what Granddaddy said, the bass is the foundation of the music. Directly across from the tenors then is a section for the alto singers when there are alto singers, and we've recently added alto singers at Hoboken, which is women only, and they sing a another part of the harmony that goes between the bass and the treble.
What does shaped note singing mean to you? Just talk about the feeling or the spirituality, the family, what comes to mind.
Shaped note singing is a way of life, and it's a way of communicating. Our people can sing their love for each other in ways that they can't talk about it. The singing requires that you, this style of singing requires that you have more and more people. And the more people that you can have there singing together, the better it sounds. Obviously, when you sing together with people, with family members or community members, and when you live your life among these people, you make connections that you wouldn't have to strangers. And when we sing together, it's a language or a way of us describing our love for each other in a deep and a heartwarming way. It means it's a way of life to me, and it's the way that our people have always gone.
Somewhere else that's so powerful to people. If you can just
I'm not exactly sure how to put that in words. The singing that we do with each other is bigger than we are. We sing to each other out of a profound respect for a supreme being, for our Lord, that controls our people and our way. This singing is a gift. This singing is a spiritual gift, and it's a heavenly gift. This is not anything that I could invent or have discovered or make up. It's more than this singing that we do is more than I can do or me and my family members can do. And there's things that takes place at these things. There's feelings and there's power exhibited at these things that people can't contrive. It is certainly it's a gift from above because I've never seen any other music. I've never seen any other group of people that could create this feeling just on a whim or just by themselves. There is something here that had to come from above because we can't make this up because, I said, I'll get carried away in a minute. This music has taken us generation after generation of us from the cradle to the grave and beyond. And our belief is that, and according to the Bible that I read, is that in heaven there will be singing. And this singing that we do down here is a foretaste of heaven. And it's a piece of what we'll have when we get there. And when we meet again all those people that were here one time that have gone on before us. We look forward to the day that we can be together again when we can sing and sing forever. That's what this singing ultimately, how it ultimately ties us together. Of course, it also has the temporal ties where we remember somebody had a particular favorite. When somebody sings a song, then we remember who that song was claimed by or who it belonged to. Or we say that that song belonged to Granddaddy or Grandpa Raymond. Or this song was the song we sung at a certain baptism of a cousin or a brother. Or that a particular song is the one that was used when we buried somebody. Or that there are words to a particular song that fits our case at the moment. This song, this music we sing when we're sad, and it helps us to move through that sadness. This music we sing when we're happy. We sing when we're joyful. And we sing when we just purely want entertainment. Sometimes it's just exciting to sing together. Or you sing slow songs or you sing fast songs. And it has a lot of meaning that goes beyond what we do as a normal course of life. There's another place that we go when we're singing together. And I don't know how to get to that place except to go there by singing. That's the only way I have of getting there, and it's an understood thing. It's not something that we, when a child reaches a certain age, we sit them down and say, okay, now you're going to start singing, and this is what it's going to accomplish. This singing is something that I believe we hear it before we're born, and obviously we'd have to. The scientists say we can hear our mother's voice before we're born, when we're even in the womb. And I know if we can hear that, we can hear her sing. And so it's something that we start before we ever come here. We are imbued with it. It surrounds us. It's part of who we are and makes us be what we are. It guides and colors the kind of people that we become. And they'll just have to edit all that out that they don't want. I don't know what.
What are you doing to help provide this singing, especially here locally?
To help do what?
Revive the singing.
Oh, revive it.
Or revitalize it. I don't think it's ever died, but you wanted to revitalize.
Yeah, I wanted to restore some community pride in this music because it belongs to this community. Because at one time, there weren't a house you could go into that you wouldn't have found a songbook on the mantel shelf. Well, in typical fashion, when children become teenagers, they want to show their independence and they tend to set aside the things of their parents so that they can be their own person. And so I think that over a period of time, if the parents let them get away with that, they have grown away from this singing. And I think in some fashion, maybe even a little bit ashamed of it when they're out in public, among the high end people of the day. But what I want to do is to show them that actually they have a very precious heritage that a lot of people are interested in and are and surprised by. And that I want to reestablish this community pride for this heritage that this community has, this unique heritage, because there's not a lot of places that have exactly what we've got in Hoboken. They don't go back as far. There's other places that sing this music that's not been singing it as long. There's other places that sing this music that does not have the local flavor that this singing does for us. We have a distinctive style of singing. And I want to make sure, I want to reestablish the community pride in this music that they one time had, where they were proud to step up and support it and say, yes, this is something that makes that marks who we are.
How are you doing that?
I'm doing that by working with our resident ethnomusicologist.
Remember, you have to edit that part out.
I'm, it's up to them.
Oh, okay. I'm I'm working to researching as much of the history, the local history of the singing as I can, and having it recorded. We've got it recorded and now in the Library of Congress, and we're working to record it in a local heritage center museum. We're sending mailers to everybody that I can to remind them of these things. We're having a monthly sing out here. We've restarted our annual all-day sing in 1996. We restarted that after a 50 years had gone by that we didn't have one. And trying to include everybody through newspaper articles that have been done about it, that we've been able to get done about it, and by going around and teaching and leading sings in other churches around the community and in other areas around this part, or other locations around this part of the country, so that the young people can be made aware of it, because it's been put away for a while and it's been put in the back of the closet, so to speak, and it needs to be brought back out and dusted off and set back out on the coffee table or on the mantel shelf again where it used to be, so that everybody can be proud of what they've got. It's a special thing.
All right. Well, here's the last one. This is the last one. The question is what the significance of shape note singing is to the world at large. Do you think there's a gift or a role that, I mean, you've spoken to it about yourself personally, and maybe you already answered that question. I was debating.
No. Let me say this. This singing together, what it means to the world at large is this. If we could get everybody in the world interested in singing this music, and we could do it if we started them when they were a child, they would grow up in it, they'd be interested in it. You can't get away from it once you grow up in it. If we could get everybody in the world singing this music, there's one thing it would do. It would end every problem that everybody has with each other. Because there's two points to make. One is, this singing sounds better the more people you have. The bigger the crowd is, the better it sounds. So it forces you to be nice to people, because you don't want to run them off, because you need them to help you sing, so that your singing will sound better. So if everybody in the world had to sing this music and was interested in it, one thing they'd do is be nice to each other, because they would want to entice people to come sing with them. And so it would end all the problems in the whole world. This music would. That's my statement on what it'd do for the world. Points that we may want to... I think we covered all that they can use in a, you know, to try to briefly tell somebody, because there's only so much that you can say in a short length of time about this, and it's a fairly complex thing to describe. It's hard to reduce it to just a few sentences. The real important point was what it means, the way it's used as a language. I fully believe that it's a way people can communicate with each other in a way, on a plane that they can't reach with their natural words, and that's ultimately what it goes to. All the rest of it is just the technical aspects of it, or the historical aspects, or the heritage aspects.
Mm-hmm.